Blog Talk Radio.
I got a letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, no concern that. Man, we don't have to settle this another way. A letter from the government the other day. I opened and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, no concern that. Man, we don't have to settle this another way.
Movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life. This movement, music, move into it. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life.
Word is
any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussy-footing, that's the government. Any kind of act that's designed to delay, or deprive you and me right now of getting full rights, that's the government that's responsible. And any time you find the government involved in a conspiracy,
I can never go back. Life without parole, upstate, shackled and trapped. Living in the hole, looking at the world through a crack. Fuck that, I'd rather shoot it out and get clapped. I've gone too far, there ain't no coming back for me. Auschwitz gas chamber full of Zyklon B. Just like the Spanish exterminating Tainos, raping the black and Indian women, creating Latinos. Motherfucker, made me out of self-righteous hatred. And now you got yourself a virus, stuck in the matrix. A suicide bomber, strapped and ready to blow. Lethal injection, strapped down, ready to go. Don't you understand, they'll never let me live out in peace. Concrete jungle, guerrilla war out in the streets. Nat Turner with the sickle, pitchfork and machete. The end of the world, motherfucker, are you not ready?
DJ Tony Drake.
This is DJ Tony Drake, a.k.a. Mr. Top Shelf himself. And right now, you're in tune to Your World News, where journalism and activism are not mutually exclusive. Here on yourworldnews.org.
You can't tell me life was meant to be like this. A black man in a world dominated by whiteness ever since the Declaration of Independence. We've been easily brainwashed by just one sentence. It goes, all men are created equal. That's why corrupt governments kill innocent people. With chemical warfare, they created crack and AIDS. Got the public thinking these were things that black folks made. And every time there's violence shown in the media, usually it's a black thing. So where are they leading you? To a world full of ignorance, hatred and prejudice. TV and the news for years they've fed you this foolish notion that blacks are all criminals, violent lowlifes, and then even animals. I'm telling the truth, so some suckers are fearing me, but I must do my part to combat the conspiracy.
Another edition of Your World News. I'm your host, Solomon. I'm your co-host, Solomon Kamajan, and we are also joined by my co-host, Naveed Nasser, who I'll bring on the line in one moment. It's a nice day to resist and to fight the machine and to call out the hypocrisies. And we have a special show today, a show that is right on time. And I say it right on time because yesterday, I'll let Naveed break it down in a second. Yesterday was the launching of one of the biggest hypocrisies and jokes, and I mean, it's just one of the most repugnant ploys by white liberals that I've seen in a long time. White liberals and a few of their comrades that are people of color. But something that was massively launched by white liberals yesterday, the Coney 2012 scheme and scam and more importantly the blind eye and the deaf ear that was turned to their own government's complicity and death and destruction of men, women, and children the world over. So I'm bringing on Naveed Nasser because I want to hit the ground running. Naveed, are you with us? Can you hear me? One moment. All right, can you hear me now?
Yeah, what is with you?
Beautiful, Naveed. Welcome back. And I know this is our first show apart. You know, in terms of not being in the studio together. Mm-hmm. You're joining us from parts unknown, and hopefully you heard my introduction to the show that we've discussed immediately yesterday when you called me, and I was unaware of the Coney 2012 and I don't know what else to call it, the propaganda expose that they put out there, and mm-hmm. I checked it out as you told me you told me I was probably gonna throw up, and. And mentally, I did. I tuned in. I watched the entire half hour, mm-hmm. and you were right, man. And I ended up. I was infuriated. So, can you give us a background of what Coney 2012 is, was, and is going to be? And once you're done, let's get into what we discussed. Let's get right into the hypocrisy, hypocrisies, and. And everything else that goes along with what white liberals conveniently forget to leave off their pages and voices and so forth. So if you can just let us know, what is Coney 2012?
Well, I was unaware of even the existence of this group, Invisible Children, that is responsible for producing this. Very well put together video. It's incredibly well put together. Mm-hmm. It's obvious that a lot of time, a lot of effort, and a lot of money went into producing this. It's as professional as anything I've seen come out of a Hollywood studio. And it's the sole purpose of this video, Coney 2012, seems to be to justify not only the already existing presence of U.S. quote-unquote advisors on the ground in Uganda, but also to promote even further intervention in the country in the year 2012, and it does so by appealing to both the guilt of white liberals and also their sense of self-righteousness. In other words, it's horrible, Africa and the children, if not us, who's going to save them? You know, mm-hmm. it's strikingly effective. I've talked to people who I know have more than a couple of brain cells to rub together.
Right.
It's unbelievable. But when I saw it, to me, it was just like, so over the top, I really can't understand how anyone could really fall for it, unless it's like they're just not used to thinking critically about anything, because, I mean, even Libya, even Yugoslavia, even Syria haven't been sold in quite as over the top a manner as this has. This is unbelievable. When I saw it, it was just shameless. It was naked, and it was out there. Like, you know, we need to go and we need to increase our military presence in Uganda for the sake of the children. And if you don't want to do that, then you're in favor of, you know, children being raped and killed and mutilated.
You know, it's funny, though, Naveed, I mean, about that whole thing, and you know, which is not funny at all, but, you know, it's really sickening. That, and I'm glad you mentioned that. You know, if you're not in favor of Coney 2012, then you're in favor of children getting, you know, maimed and raped and so forth. First and foremost, you know, the Invisible Children, since their inception and the documentary they put out several years ago, and you know, they have a documentary that's out. And unfortunately, I'm very familiar with that group. And, you know, it's another propaganda thing. It's, you know, propaganda from the standpoint that it's like these white saviors rush into Africa and we're saving all these kids in northern Uganda from, you know, as a result of the 21-year war that lasted there, that started in 1986 and ended, you know, officially, unofficially in about 2007, you know, when since there's been like relative peace there. You know, minus the Kony faction that's been bouncing around, you know, Democratic Republic of Congo and doing and causing atrocities there. But Naveed, there are tons of people on the ground, black Ugandans, who have been doing amazing work on behalf of children in Uganda, former child soldiers and so forth. You know, the Invisible Children organization, you know, would have you thinking that these white saviors, I mean, they go there and they set everything up and they'll you know, and they can instruct, you know, a couple native northern Ugandans, you know, to do this, that, and the other, but it's all under the direction of these white liberals. They have to come in there and they have to save the day. But here's the thing, Naveed. You and I are both, you know what I'm saying, justice-oriented individuals. I mean, we wouldn't be doing this show if we weren't. We are on the side of justice. We you know, find, you know, the abduction of children and the killing of children reprehensible. We find that you know, people that starve children to the point that hundreds of thousands of them have died. People that prevent sanitary water from getting to children. They're the scum of the earth that caused these children to die, hundreds of thousands. But here's the thing that differentiates us from them, Naveed, all right, mm-hmm. is the fact that we have no qualms calling out the government in terms of the country in which we're situated right now, because mm-hmm. the U.S. government has done all of those things. You know, we go back. We can go back. I mean, for a long, long time. But if people are, you know, they have short-term memories or what have you, and they want us to keep it recent. I mean, we can go to Iraq. This latest Iraq invasion that started in 2003. You know, most of the close to a million plus people that have been killed have been civilians, and probably close to half of them have been children. But look at the sanctions and what impact they had on Iraqi civilians. You know, 500,000 Iraqi children were killed because of the sanctions, the prevention of sanitary water and medical resources to come into Iraq. And what did that warthog, what's her name, Madeleine Albright, by Leslie Stahl in 60 Minutes? I mean, she basically, in no uncertainty, said, yeah. Yeah, it was justified. Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is the machine. You don't see these white liberals, the Invisible Children. You don't see any of them calling out their government for war. You don't see them calling out their government for the sanctions placed on Zimbabwe. You know, where that has taken literally, you know, hundreds of thousands of lives since those sanctions have been imposed upon. Nothing like that. You don't see them calling out their government for these imperialist wars. Libya, which is what we've talked about numerous times, Naveed, you know, the civilians that have been maimed and killed, you know, by U.S., you know, airstrikes, as well as their CIA-backed, you know, racist rebels that have hung, have lynched, raped, you know, black, you know, African women and men and any supporters.
Them like animals.
You know,
exactly.
So, Naveed, I mean, what gives, man? What gives from these so-called activists, these progressives, who are just so, you know what I'm saying? Well, yeah, you're right. You said, all right, you know, they have a couple brain cells, but clearly, they're simple-minded to some extent, you know, because, you know, they ate this propaganda up as well. They ate like large heaping helpings you know, and they went back for seconds and thirds of this stuff without, for a second, checking their own government.
Mm-hmm. I don't even think it has anything to do with any lack of intelligence on the part of the kind of people that I'm talking about. There's various degrees of how can I phrase it? White bourgeois liberals. Some of them are more slacker and unintelligent and self-indulgent and hedonistic types. Some of them are more socially conscious, aware, activist types, who get involved in lots of things, who read a lot, know a lot of things, are a little more intelligent, and there's a degree of sort of like overlap between the two sometimes. But the problem is not, as I see it at least, the problem is not lack of intelligence on anyone's part. The problem is the internalization of a particular narrative. And the narrative that's been internalized by most of these people, even the ones who call themselves, I'm willing to allow for exceptions, but even most of the ones who call themselves revolutionaries have internalized this narrative of exceptionalism, have internalized this narrative of, for lack of a better way of putting it, paternalistic white supremacy. This is ingrained in them, you know, and I don't know what it's going to take for them to let go of this, for them not to believe that everywhere else in the world is messed up purely on its own, that the government that acts in their name had nothing to do with it, and that, in fact, that government is the only thing that can save those people from a far worse fate than what they're going through right now. It's either unbelievable naivete or stupidity, or it's that narrative of exceptionalism, that narrative of paternalistic white supremacy. And for my dollar, having interacted with a lot of these people, it's that last option that is the closest to reality. They've internalized this narrative and they act on it. In other words, yeah, sure, they may have some problems with the government that they live under, but essentially at the end of the day, it's not so bad compared to what else that's out there. And generally, it acts in the best interest of them and everyone else in the world. They may not phrase it that way, but I mean, it's obvious by their actions. If they truly believe, for example, I can't imagine, I struggle with this, not just with people of my own background, but also with the dominant culture when it came to Libya and when it comes to Syria. I cannot believe that anyone in their right frame of mind would look at the people who are responsible for the horrors of Guantanamo, Bagram, and Iraq, and Afghanistan, the drone strikes in Pakistan, the paymasters of the Zionists, the horrors that have been unleashed on Somalia. I can't believe that anyone would look on the institutions and the individuals responsible for all that and believe these are the only people who can free us. The mentality that is at work there is literally unbelievable to me, and the only way that it works, I can work it out in my mind, is these people have internalized that particular narrative of exceptionalism, and it extends from them all the way to the state, all the way to the head of state even.
Yeah, I think it could be a combination of the three, but yeah, actually, to tell you the truth, I would lean more towards, because you know what, at least stupidity, that's correctable and not as simply nefarious as people that just actually know, you know, they know better, but it's a planned, you know, attempt on their part to highlight, you know, their American exceptionalism, as you said, to highlight, you know, this white supremacist ideology that festers within their head, this very, you know, reprehensible, you know, ideology, you know, I might add, you know, for those folks that don't see it as such, that is alive and well in 2012, but, you know, it's funny, Naveed, like, you know, because, you know, I started off by naming, we talked about Iraq, we talked about Zimbabwe, we talked about all these different, Libya, all these places where U.S. and Western imperialism has reared its ugly and deadly head that has taken the lives of well over a million people. And this is just recent. You know, we can, if we go back, you know, you know, we'll, it'll,
start to tally up millions upon millions. We should know that since Vietnam, any U.S. military excursion, these U.S. military escapades that have gone on, have taken 90% of the people that have been killed in these things have been civilians. 90%. 90%. You know what I'm saying? At very least 90%. But here's the thing, Naveed. What about if we don't go? What about we don't even go outside U.S. borders? What about these little white liberal punks? All right, the ones that want to parade themselves around as if they're and they remind me of the white missionaries that encroached upon much of Africa, that encroached upon Latin America, and brought that hypocritical Bible with them. Now what about looking within the U.S. borders? What about looking at Southeast D.C.? What about looking at Detroit, Michigan? What about looking at any place where there's a large population of black and brown people in this country? And looking at the police brutality? How about the police brutality? Do they talk about do they come together and lock arms akimbo, go out marching and say, forget Coney 2012, police force, police brutality or police state 2012. We want to end the police brutality in 2012. Nothing. They don't say a damn thing. So we don't even have to go. We don't have to go outside U.S. borders to see where the U.S. government, through its police state, has taken the lives of countless men, women, and children, by way of brutal policing. Ayanna Stanley Jones, Delonte Rollins. I mean, we can go on and on, in terms of naming children, people under the age of 18 who have been killed by police. They're not saying a damn thing about it, are they, Navid? Nothing.
No, they're not. I mean, this is exactly, you hit the nail on the head here, Solomon. What we're talking about here, aside from what I talked about before, the mentality that's at work, the thing that I oftentimes criticize these people for is the shameless hypocrisy that they just flaunt, and they dare anyone to call them out on it. Almost, it's almost like that. Like it's like it's so naked and so in your face that they're almost challenging you to call them out on it, and no one does. Like very few people do. Very few people do that, and it needs to be done. It needs to be, their selective outrage needs to be pointed out. Their selective care and concern for the things that somehow miraculously always seem to coincide with the interests of the foreign policy establishment of the U.S., that needs to be pointed out. The fact that they're letting the cities in the U.S. rot, deteriorate in terms of infrastructure, in terms of services, in terms of everything, and they're not doing anything, lifting one finger to help these population groups that exist in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
That needs to be pointed out, and they need to be challenged. They need to be challenged. The best intentions of them need to be challenged. The ones who are the ones who actually do have good intentions and who are not deliberately misleading others, which I believe is exactly what the three people in charge of this organization are doing. They know damn well what they're doing. Otherwise, they wouldn't be, posing with those goofy fucking, with those goofy looks on their faces with automatic rifles, posing with the Sudan People's Liberation Army if they didn't know what they were doing. They know exactly what they're doing. These are not babes in the woods here. They're the ones who are misleading the others who are following them. So, but the people who are being misled, they need to be challenged also. Maybe not in quite as harsh a manner, but they need to be challenged, and they need to at least make an attempt to they're essentially they're ignorant of exactly what's going on, the facts on the ground. They've been emotionally manipulated, and they need facts, and that's in order to remedy them of that ignorance. That's what's going on. And I apologize for earlier. I apologize.
That's all right. And I just want to remind folks that this is Your World News, and
And you listen, and you can hear Your World News every Friday at from 11 to 12 Eastern Standard Time on 1480 AM in Washington, D.C., We Act Radio. That's We Act Radio, 1450 AM. Naveed, you brought up something that really was right on point, man. And I don't know if you know how on point it was when you talked about how they were opposing, you know, with different armies. It's interesting that they also, since they're situated there and they're after Coney, and they're saying go after Coney. What's interesting, Naveed, is they're not calling for U.S. allies to be brought down. And what I mean by that, I'm talking about folks who are strong allies of the U.S. And most folks should know now that since the mid-90s, over 6-7 million Congolese people have lost their lives, have been killed. All right, it's the worst humanitarian loss of lives since World War II. And and it took this country a long time to even, you know, to report on it. And still, most Americans still don't know. But what's interesting, certainly the invisible children know about this. I mean, certainly because Coney, I mean, one of the places he's hiding out is in the northeast Kivu region of Congo. But you know what's funny is that you don't hear them calling out Joseph Kabila. They don't hear them calling out Paul Kagame, the president of Rwanda, all right? And you don't hear them calling out Yoweri Museveni, president of Uganda, all right?
Exactly.
These folks have more blood on their hands, more blood. They have so much blood on their hands that Coney could swim in a pool of the blood that they have accumulated along the way. A pool of, and it is not conjecture, folks. This is something that is known. And the U.S. continues to have strong relationships, especially with Paul Kagame and Museveni in Uganda. Strong relationships. Why? Because they're complicit. They have no qualms having the U.S. come there and do, you know, military exercises as they did a few years ago with Operation Thunder and Lightning. They have no qualms with the U.S. setting up, you know, AFRICOM. They have no problems with that plan to militarize Africa and a new age recolonization of Africa. No qualms whatsoever. So you don't hear the invisible children and the little sycophants that follow them on Facebook and have been following them for years. Don't hear them calling out these leaders and calling out their own U.S. government for being in bed with folks who support these kind of dictatorship, like real dictatorship. Like we're talking about, if you want to, not this, like, you know, made up dictatorship that they always that the U.S. government and their corporate media like to make up, where they call, like, people like,
what do you call Chavez the dictator, Mugabe a dictator, Morales the dictator? Yeah, I hear you.
Exactly. So they have no qualms with these folks, man. They have no qualms with these folks who have, I mean, for instance, I mean, Museveni has more blood on his hands than Idi Amin and Coney could ever even dream of, and nothing. They are a bunch of hypocrites, and Invisible Children is a microcosm of American society itself, of the U.S. government and the propaganda scheme. And Naveed, don't let us get started. Well, we will get started. Don't let us get started with Invisible Children. Are they calling out Israel? Does Israel, last time I checked, are they complicit? Not even complicit. Does Israel, have they been orchestrating death and destruction and oppression and repression and apartheid since 1948? Am I right or wrong on that one?
Well, so several things. One, it'll be a cold day in a very hot place before any member of what I refer to as the human rights industrial complex calls for intervention of any sort to deal with the repressive and brutal regimes in power in places like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, in places like Bahrain, in places like Uganda, on behalf of the people and against the government. They will intervene in Uganda on behalf of the government in order ostensibly to fight the Lord's the Lord's rebel. But here's the thing. The LRA, from everything that I have read and heard, the LRA has not even had a presence in Uganda in years. They have retreated from the country years ago. Joseph Kony is almost like a boogeyman. He's almost like the Osama bin Laden of Uganda at this point. No one has seen him. They haven't done anything in Uganda in years. They've retreated across the border into Congo, into southern Sudan, into other places. You know, so they're not. I mean, they're ostensibly intervening in Uganda to fight this phantom army that doesn't even have a presence there, and at most, the total number of members of the LRA, of armed men of the LRA right now, is less than 400, at most.
Mm-hmm.
To use this ratcat, barely existing military force as an excuse to go full bore into Uganda militarily begs the question, what are they really after? And why are they intervening on the side of Museveni? I know someone personally who fled Uganda, because Museveni had essentially enacted a law making open expression of homosexuality punishable by death. Okay?
Right.
So it's curious that no mention of that was made in this video, because I have a feeling that for a lot of white liberals and a lot of white progressives, that might have like been something to make them pause and reflect. That they're asking for, that this group, Invisible Children, is asking for intervention on behalf of a government that has enacted such a policy.
Right.
You know?
There might have been some
pause and, you know, some reason to reflect. Maybe it isn't quite as, pardon the expression, maybe it isn't quite as black and white as we thought it was. You know?
Right.
Maybe.
Without a doubt.
I don't know. Maybe even that wouldn't be enough. I don't know. Once the self-righteousness train gets rolling for a lot of these people, it's hard to, you know, slam on the brakes. So maybe that wouldn't have been enough. But maybe it would have been, you know. So this is part of the reality of the situation on the ground. John Pilger wrote a column, the excellent, always on point, Australian analyst and reporter, who goes to a lot of conflict spots all around the world. He had an excellent column in the fall when American quote unquote advisors. And by the way, I gotta say this. I wasn't young enough personally myself to remember it in terms of having lived through it. But I've read enough about Vietnam to know that you know, when people say these are advisors and not troops, you're talking semantics. Quote-unquote advisors were the first forces on the ground in Vietnam, you know?
Yeah.
And so a lot of the pushback against what me and you are saying now, what a lot of other people are saying in response to this Kony 2012 video is, oh, you guys are just, you know, blowing hot air about nothing. These aren't even troops. These are just advisors. Advisors
right.
are troops. You know, advisors
exactly.
are troops. And they're oftentimes, they're the first troops on the ground. So people need to get a grip with the semantics of the situation.
Well, speaking of semantics, real quick, not to interrupt you, but you know, I'm glad you brought that up. You know, the military advisors, yeah, they're troops, but it's the same semantics they used. You know, when they, you know, allegedly pulled out of Iraq, they said the only thing that's going to be there are non-combatant U.S. troops. What the hell is a non-combatant U.S. troop? Is that,
right.
Are they out there with water guns? I mean, no, they're strapped up.
Yeah, the base is
going to
be the only thing. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Naveed, just for folks that don't recall the carnage that happened close to this time last year in Mother Africa, I just want to play this clip really quickly from Glenn Ford from Black Agenda Report, just to refresh people's minds. And what's interesting is you don't see these little, you know, I'm going to have to sort of bite my tongue, you know, because I have some real choice words for our you know, those liberal, white liberal commentators that you find on MSNBC, the Rachel Maddows and Schultz's, the ones that were banging the drums of war to go in there militarily into Libya, loud and clear. They've got blood on their hands as well. They are not beyond reproach. They are not beyond responsibility. They are accountable because there's tens of millions of people that listen to them all the time. And what's the funny thing is, funny from a standpoint that you have to laugh to keep them crying, is the fact that no words right now. We have black Libyans that we know that are being held in cages, like literally, and being paraded around as if it's a zoo. They're calling it a zoo. They're putting black Africans, all right, whether they may be black Libyans or black, Africans from Niger or Mali.
No, they're Libyans. I know exactly what you're talking about. They're Libyans. The original video that you sent me actually identified them as being from Tawarga in Arabic. I mean, it was written
from
in Arabic, Tawarga. But they're black Libyans. They're not even like quote-unquote African workers or anything like that. These are black
Libyans in that
page.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're held like, and they're called, it's a zoo, and they're having them eat clothing, eat their socks, eat their underwear. I mean, and these are the ones that are, I guess, quote unquote, fortunate enough not to have been mutilated or lynched or what have you, but they're being tortured. They're being humiliated like animals, like literally like animals. These are the rebels that Rachel Maddow and Ed Schultz and all the rest of these white liberals, of course, yes, of course, the Fox News, they are what they are, but all the rest of it, and all the damn Americans. And I put the blood on Americans' hands as well. Those that when they heard about it before, they hadn't said the word Libya for several years, if ever. They couldn't tell you where Libya was on a map. But as soon as they get the calling card from their ventriloquist Western corporate media, MSNBC, CNN, all of a sudden now they're concerned. Oh man, the dictator. Oh, he's got to be taken out. He's got to be taken out. We got to go in there, bomb him, get him. But in the meantime, there's a much different narrative on the ground, one that's called reality. And those lies can never, ever, ever be brought back, never be brought back. Where are those damn white liberals now championing the rights of those black Africans that were maimed and murdered? Where are those white liberals? Banging the drums of liberation to say, get the hell out of Africa. Get out of Africa, U.S. government. Get out of there. Stop being a neo-colony. So I want to play this real quickly, and I want to get, first and foremost, get your response on the other end. I just want to remind folks of this.
The rebels in Benghazi have rejected an African Union delegation proposal for a ceasefire in Libya, a plan that was accepted by Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi over the weekend. The reaction in Benghazi was no surprise. The five heads of state from Mauritania, Mali, Congo-Brazzaville, Uganda, and South Africa would have been chased down the streets and lynched by mobs had the Western news media not been watching. So rabid is the anti-black hysteria whipped up by the rebel political leadership. If anyone needs protection in rebel-held Libya, it is people with dark skin, hundreds of whom have been murdered for no offense other than their color. Spokesmen for the Rebel Transitional Council claim to be fighting phantom black African armies, mirages that do not exist, a despicable use of race as a tool of war. In reality, the rebels are not in a position to accept or reject anything. Whatever their political composition may have been when protests against the government in Tripoli began back in February, they are now totally dependent minions of the United States and Europe. They have chosen to become soldiers of an Arab counter-revolution in the service of imperialism. What kind of revolution, what kind of Arab nationalism is it that begs for intervention and close air support from the imperial superpower? The African Union heads of state had to seek approval for their delegation from the European Union, according to the BBC. Western media dismissed the peace mission as suspect, many of them referring to the African Union as a club for the benefit of African rulers. If that is so, it is a circumstance that Africans will deal with. the actual club that threatens Black Africa and Arab Africa and all the world's people is the Euro-American Club. France, Britain, Belgium, the United States, and the other world enslavers that are joined in the hyper-aggressive military club called NATO, the most dangerous club on the planet. The African Union proposal called for an immediate ceasefire, suspension of NATO airstrikes, a dialogue between the Gaddafi government and the rebels, unhindered delivery of humanitarian aid, and protection of foreign nationals. The last item points to the obscene behavior of the rebels and their European overseers, especially. 3 million foreign workers did the manual labor that kept Libya's economy going so that 6 million Libyans could enjoy the highest standard of living by far on the African continent. Half of those foreign workers, 1.5 million, are Black Africans, whose abuse in rebel-held areas since February will stain the national honor of Libya for a generation. The Euro-Americans also bear responsibility for the migrant workers' plight as self-appointed protectors of Libya's civilian population. Yet they have failed to maintain a safe corridor to Egypt for the hunted and despised Black Africans, making a mockery of the United Nations resolution and showing the NATO war for what it really is, a neo-colonial crusade. The real heroes in any 21st century war are those who are willing to stand up to the full spectrum domination of U.S. air power. Gaddafi's soldiers have earned the respect of all those that do not worship at the altar of imperial power. The Libyan rebel leaders have chosen to be pawns in someone else's great game. For Black Agenda Radio, I'm Glenn Ford. On the web, go to...
Yeah. And that was Glenn Ford with Black Agenda Report, and this is Your World News. You can hear us every Friday at 11 a.m. on 1480 a.m. in Washington, D.C. We Act Radio. Naveed, your comments on that?
Yeah. I know he recorded it months ago, but his observations are as on point, if not more so than ever, particularly now when we have some of these mercenaries, some of these NATO mercenaries in Libya running off to Turkey and crossing the border from Turkey to Syria to fight in that proxy war as well. Conversing, having online conversations with some of these Libyans and Syrians who are pro-NATO and pro-intervention has just been extremely humorous for me on a whole host of levels. Hearing them talk about conspiracy theories and why do you distrust the West so much if you live here, like hearing them essentially make love it or leave it arguments, I've lost a tremendous amount of, not that I really had much respect for a lot of these people to begin with, particularly since I think a lot of what drives them politically is their class background. I think it accounts for a lot of like just the fact that the trust and the inherent faith that they place in a lot of these vile institutions that have committed these horrific and heinous deeds all over the world. I think it's a reflection of their class background. They don't want to, when I try to engage with them on Iraq or Afghanistan, they don't even want to talk about it. Or they say, well, that was Iraq. I mean, we're Libya or something like that that makes like absolutely no sense. But to them, I guess it makes all the sense in the world. Bottom line is we're talking right now in this show, we're talking about Africa and we're talking about what happened in Africa. And what happened in Libya was far from liberation, far from liberation. You've had what has happened in Africa is a group of people who genuinely believe that Libya was far better off under Italian colonialism than it was under Gaddafi are now in power. When I say genuinely believe, it's their own public pronouncements. It's in their public pronouncements. They say it, you know, publicly. They're unashamed to say that. These are the people that have been placed in power by NATO, by the U.S., Libya is in for a long night, and you know, as I said before in the other podcast that we talked about, the only hope lies in the Libyan resistance, in the green Libyan resistance, which did retake Bani Walid not that long ago, and which did raise the green flag once again over that city and drove the invaders from Misrata back to their rat holes. And that needs to be acknowledged. The resistance of the heroic resistance, indigenous resistance of the Libyans needs to be acknowledged. The fact that it exists on the ground, the heroism of the Tawareg people, who predominantly live in the southwestern desert of Libya, also needs to be acknowledged. The ones who never bend the knee, who never bend at their knee before the throne of NATO, they need to be acknowledged. And similarly, the heroism of the people of Tawerga, who fought back, even though their city was basically wiped off the face of the earth, their story needs to be told and needs to be retold and remembered. And these are all lessons that people need to take to heart when talking about Uganda, when talking about military intervention. Because the bottom line is this. Museveni is not just an ally that does business with the U.S. The U.S. relies on Uganda's army in Somalia to help it in fighting al-Shabaab. And in order for, and there's a quid pro quo here, that's what this intervention is about in Uganda. That's why Museveni wants U.S. troops in Uganda. A quid pro quo, you help us out here, you bring us troops, and we'll help you out in whatever way you want in Somalia. And, you know, people need to watch, I want to say people need to wise up. That's not what, you know, that's not quite what I mean here. People need to realize that every word that comes out of the mouths of the institutions of people in institutions of power in this city, every word needs to be analyzed, dissected, and closely examined before a seal of truth is placed on it. It should be considered a falsehood until it's proven without a shadow of a doubt that it's true. Their motives always need to be in doubt and always need to be questioned. Nothing that they say or do should ever be taken at face value. Instead, we have a culture that propagates servility and subservience to these people and these institutions. We need the exact opposite of that. We need to have a culture of dissent. We need to have a culture of questioning. We need to have a culture that says, no, I'm not going to accept something that you said on face value, and just because you said it, that's not enough proof for me. Otherwise, we're going to be led by our nose into every single horrific, brutal adventure that they drag us into. Horrific and brutal for the people who are on the receiving end of the death and destruction, and horrific and brutal for the people who are on the receiving end of the economic deprivation that comes along with it right here in the U.S. So it's up to us. We have a tremendous responsibility, and if we relinquish that responsibility, history is not going to absolve us, and is not going to judge us kindly. Right. When years from now, when future generations, future generations talk about what happened here, what happened in this country, what happened to what people thought this country was, what happened? You know, why did so many people go along with all of this? It'll go a long way if there's a narrative that says there were a lot of people who resisted, who didn't just go with the flow, who didn't just say yes whenever they were asked to salute and whenever they were asked to go with the program.
Right. Right. So, and one of the things that we always do in Naveed is we try to, you know, leave folks with some kind of challenge, you know, challenges that you know, we give to ourselves on a daily basis, you know, challenges to challenges and solutions to mitigate and hopefully eradicate some of these issues that we discuss. And so I'm glad you early on the show spoke of the fact that these people need to be called out. They need to be called out. So the massive propaganda that is being put out there, I mean, I couldn't believe it yesterday. Like, when I finally, like, got home and,
and open up the YouTube, you know, propaganda piece called Kony 2012. After you told me about it, I couldn't believe at that time, because I remember when you told me, it was, you said it was something like a couple million hits. By the time I got home and pulled it up, it was 10 million hits. I have no idea what it is today. I can only imagine, but it was 10 million hits, you know, yesterday evening. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. So, you know, the only thing that can come close to trying to is our own propaganda, our own factual propaganda. And that means we have to challenge those, even those closest to us, whether you're family members. If you come home and they give you that bull crap and say, oh, it's Kony thing, man, we gotta go in there. Did you hear about this, man? You hear about this, Bobby? We gotta go in this Kony guy, man. He's a real. I saw the video and we gotta go in there and get him. We gotta get our military. We gotta, you know, all peace loving people. We gotta push the U.S. military to go in there and get this guy so we can stop these atrocities. Well, these folks need to be checked. You need to correct these folks. That's my white liberal voice. I'm sorry. I try my best. You know, you can adjust it. They're unfortunate that there are, you know, black and brown folks out there too that drink the Kool-Aid as well. You know, Lord knows that, and you know they're right now the ones that are pushing for Obama 2012. But these folks need to be corrected, man. The folks that are just completely just ignorant, they need to be corrected, and we need to bring up these things that we've brought up in this show, these things that are clear and present hypocrisies, and put them out, you know, and put them out there. And the folks that know better, that are doing this on purpose, they need to be checked. And hopefully, you'll have an opportunity to check them where other people are around, you know, where you can just call them out and say, hey, what about, you know, how come I've never heard you talk about, you know, when that little black girl from Detroit, Michigan, when I told you about that and how she was killed by the police, like, how come I never heard you, you know, talk about going there and, you know, and protesting outside, you know, Detroit PD headquarters or this, that, and the other and calling, you know, and this, that, and the other and having Detroit PD, you know, 2010, you know.
Right.
You know, where was that? Where was that? Folks, we this is part of the solution. You cannot be silent. As Dr. King said, silent, there comes a time where silence is betrayal. And now that you know, this is the first time you're hearing this stuff about the U.S., and this is the first time you're hearing this perspective about the U.S. role and you know, in imperialism and taking the lives of countless people of color the globe over, then the next time that you're presented this stuff and you keep your mouth shut, you are betraying humanity. You are just as culpable, as Dr. King said, you are just as culpable as those who are carrying out the crimes if you choose to be silent. It ends now if you have a conscience. If you have a conscience and you have any kind of backbone within you, you know, figuratively speaking, you must. There is no other option, right, Habib? There's no other option.
There's no other option. Believe me, Solomon, I know there's times, and I said this to someone last week, I can't remember who I said it to, but I mean it. There's times when it feels like you're enveloped in a tornado or a hurricane, and you're screaming into it. You know, you're screaming into a hurricane, and no one can hear you above the din. But nevertheless, that's your responsibility to do that. Who else is going to do that? If you know what's going on, and you know what's what, and you know what's up, you have a responsibility to share that information with other people. You can't just sit on it. You can't just, like, wallow in your own self-righteousness or whatever, knowing that you know what's going on. You have to go out there and do something about it, and you have to talk to other people about it and let them know what's going on. You know, I mean, we do have this tremendous responsibility. We really do. And I mean what I said about future generations judging us. Because we're sitting now, me and you especially, Solomon, we're sitting in the D.C. area where so much of the sickness and the disasters and the destruction and the death that is wrought upon people all over the world, it starts from decisions that are made right here in this city. That gives us an incredible sense of, how can I put it, we have a duty. We have a duty to respond to that, to counterbalance that in whatever way we can. to push back against that. Otherwise, we're complicit in it. That's the thing. Our silence is our complicity.
Right.
And we
That's
can't
right.
afford to be complicit in it. We can't.
Yeah.
Not for this generation, not for future generations, not for our own souls. We can't afford to be complicit in this.
Exactly. So, I'll give you the last word. I just want to remind folks that, this is Naveed Nasser and Solomon Kamazan for Your World News. Every Friday in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, you can hear us on 1480 AM, We Act Radio. That's We Act Radio, 1480 AM. And you can visit us all the time at yourworldnews.org. That's yourworldnews.org. If you are an activist, if you like to write, from a left perspective about social issues and commentary and so forth, get in contact with us. Go to yourworldnews.org and reach out to us and start to submit your pieces. It's a media collective that we're trying to build and play our part. So, Naveed, with that being said, I'll let you, take us out with any last words or parting shots. And I also want to say we're looking forward to a great show, coming up. We've been working on this. Soon we're gonna have a local scholar who focuses on the prison industrial complex, Dr. Joseph Richardson at the University of Maryland, who will be coming on in the next couple weeks or so to join us for an important dialogue, the entire program, and to break down mass incarceration and the prison industrial complex that very few scholars outside of the Michelle Alexanders and himself and other folks who do that, because we know the academy is a plantation. It is a major, major plantation. Those folks that are willing to step outside that, get a lot of negative scrutiny from within the walls of the universities that they exist. But we'll have him on. He'll be speaking the truth and giving us, most importantly, some facts and data that we need to take with us. So, Naveed, any parting shots before we adjourn this flight?
I mean, I really said all there needs to be said. I'd just be repeating myself. But the only thing I really want to say is just that we have the responsibility to counteract that stuff when we see it, and you need to think about what it is, the images, the messages that you're bombarded with daily, and think about what it is that it's asking of you. All those things, they want something from you, whether it's to buy something, whether it's to accept something or believe something, whether it's, in this case, to push the people who supposedly represent you to do something. Think about what it is that you're being manipulated towards. And don't allow them to manipulate you in that way. That's really all that I have to say. Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't. that's right. that's right on. Naveed, I'm gonna give you an option. What do you want to? Do you want to be taken out by someone who would really not like to be called a white liberal? And that's street poet Monty Smith. I got a couple pieces from him. We can go to Monty Smith. We can go to some other stuff. What do you want? What are you in the flavor for?
Street poetry. Let's go out with that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's look at see why Monty Smith likes to write what he writes. For Naveed Nasser, I'm Solomon for Your World News and We Act Radio, 1480 AM.
It's funny. Every time I'm interviewed, I'm always asked, what makes you write the way you do? Well, I write like I do because John Brown inspired me to. Because I'm an abolitionist. Because of the no-fly list. Because of unjust taxes. Because the pigs are still using poor people as target practice. Because 9/11 was an inside job. Because the School of Americas is still open. Therefore, Latin America is still open to rob. Because the majority of blacks in this penal colony still follow the master's religion. Because we're killing ourselves over simple traditions. Because James Byrd has been forgotten. Because greed is starving our souls. Because Babylon is so rotten. Because Brandon McClellan's story hasn't been told. I write like I do because the Move 9 needs me to. Because you may be thinking change, but Obama won't free Mumia. Because someone raped and killed Sister Rita. Because AIDS is man-made. Because the CEOs killed Brother Wade. Because hate caved in Emmett Till's head. Because most whites believe racism is dead. Because there's a war against the youth and no one cares. Because Curtis Mayfield died broke in a wheelchair. Because the mark of the beast isn't 666, it's the cross around your neck. Because rap music is under corporate check. Because 160 private prisons are functioning in 26 states. Because our sanity is at stake. Because revolutionary music is under federal attack. Because many of you haven't read the Patriot Act. I write like I do because Peter Tosh told me to. Because Western civilization equals white domination. Because manifest destiny has been replaced by globalization. Because No Child Left Behind is a joke. Because the 60s traded revolution for disco and coke. Because resistance is all I taste. Because what's popular ain't real. It's programming that kills, like believing in religion, money, and race. Because my brother committed suicide. Because there's a digital divide. Because Shaquanda Cotton has been forgotten. Because Unicor is profiting off the poor. Because Babylon is so rotten. Because mentally, mama can't take it anymore. I write like I do because very few are willing to. Because it feels good not to fit in. Because we need more sit-ins, mass rallies, and teach-ins. Because riot police don't wear numbers or names on their uniforms. Because the U.S. has signed over 400 treaties with the Indians and violated every one. Because Bill Hicks is dead and gone. Because when it comes to reparations, it's the same old song. Because no one group can start the people's revolution. Because solidarity is the only solution. Because we live in a world where the darker you are, the more hunted you are. Because I don't like religious nationalism. Fascism is fascism. Because the Coca-Cola and Banadex courts in Colombia are killing union leaders. Because I love my daughter, but it's getting harder to feed her. Because revolution is bloody, and most slaves aren't willing to face it. I write like I do because there's blood in this poetry, and I want you to taste it.